So today, we're going to talk about manifestation, which we kind of talk about every meeting. But while it may be our favorite topic, it's there are a myriad of ways to look at it and talk about it. So hopefully everybody keeps learning and growing. Now this chapter in the Love and Law is entitled Success in Our Environment and Personal Relationships. And it's really short, so my talk will not be extensive, but it has a lot of food for thought. And I really learned a lot by reading this chapter. So normally we start reading our chapters pretty well ahead of time, because what happens is it starts to sink in, and then your life, it's like asking a question, it starts expanding. So I have been living this chapter for a while now.
Great.
And this, if I had to say one sentence about what this chapter is about, it addresses the question as to whether or not we can manifest for other people. Mm. Now, when I talk about practitioner in this talk, what I'm talking about is a person that is studying religious science and can do treatments for other people. It does not necessarily mean that they're licensed. So we all are practitioners in our own way. So I love the beginning of the chapter. Four clients have come to a practitioner and they need some treatment. A is making $15 a week, B makes $25, C makes $50, and D makes $200. So as a practitioner, we see no difference between them. They may all look alike. They're all four personalities in the one mind. And they're asking, believe it or not, for a treatment for more money. So as a practitioner, you state in the one mind that they're abundant, and each of these clients gets the same treatment with the same amount of thought and force behind it. They're given to understand that, you know, you explain to them that all manifestation occurs in the mind, and they accept this fact. Yeah, after the treatment's done, they all have the same amount of money. What happened? You might think that at least one person would be receiving more money. I hope that $15 a week person is making more money. But in truth, the chapter will tell you that we don't create for others if the mental equivalent isn't there, and I'll explain that, if it isn't there in their own consciousness. So mental equivalence, for those of you that may not be familiar with the term, is simply the mental images or mental versions of our desires. They're the thoughts and images from which we build our desires or with which we find our desires. That was a direct quote from Google. For everything you wish to create for yourself, there's a mental equivalent. So for instance, if I want to create a cup of coffee, you know, I imagine the taste of a cup of coffee, and I just keep expanding on that until I can actually feel the coffee in my mouth. And that's building a mental equivalent. Now on a personal level, I've just started reading some of Joseph Murphy's books. I don't know if any of you have heard of him. Mm-hmm. He was born in Ireland and started out as a Jesuit priest. And he gave up that habit.
Too much.
So he and Holmes and Neville Goddard all teach basically the same things, but they have slightly different emphases. And Joseph Murphy, when he came to this country, actually met Ernest Holmes and eventually became a religious science minister. Oh. And I'm going to read you a quote from one of his books, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind. Remember, we each have a mind and need to remember how to use it. There are two levels, the conscious or rational level and the subconscious or irrational level. We think with our conscious minds, and the subconscious mind is the creative mind fed by the conscious mind. So in other words, every time you're thinking, you know, like a cup of coffee, it's really feeding your subconscious mind. And pretty soon somebody's going to walk in with a cup of coffee for me.
Or I'm going to go out and get one.
That's right.
That's the pragmatic approach.
So if you're thinking peaceful thoughts, for example, peace will follow. And if you're thinking angry thoughts, you're likely to stay angry. So our four clients, the ones with their money problems, were probably focused more on their lack than on being abundant, which is why there probably wasn't a good result to the treatment. So this is really interesting. Psychologists and psychiatrists say that when thoughts are conveyed to your subconscious mind, the impressions are made on your brain cells. Isn't that interesting? So as soon as your subconscious accepts any idea, it proceeds to put it into effect right away. And for instance, I know I've got this thing about books. I love to read. I love to read. I belong to one of these social media groups for readers. I set goals for how many books I'm going to read. And if I'm not out buying books, people are giving me books. Mm-hmm. And then when I discovered a Kindle, you know, thousands followed. And on top of that, I have access to my online library on OverDrive. So I'm constantly borrowing books from my online library.
Wow.
Yeah, so books are part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I focus on it, and I get a lot of it. Tons of books. So I had, you know, when you work with these principles a lot, sometimes you get some demonstrations of exactly what's going on. So somebody who's really close to me wanted to sell her house. And the reason they were doing that, it was a financial burden, the kids were gone. And so she asked me for help in selecting an exact time for selling the house. And the house was in an area that was outside of the city boundaries. Mm-hmm. And at one time, families loved to live out in the burbs, but now they're more wanting to be inside the city, you know, where they can walk to restaurants and things like that. So hers was out in the burbs, and the houses around her weren't selling too well. So she instinctively knew to ask for some spiritual help. Mm-hmm. And getting it to sell quickly. So after I gave her the date, I talked to her about focusing on the end result, which was the celebration that she would be having and feeling how good it was to be free of the monthly mortgage and all the bills and things like that. Mm-hmm. That come with living in a big house in the burbs. So as we predicted, the house sold quickly and she was elated. But then, as the time went on, as they moved closer and closer to settlement, her thoughts towards the seller became really negative. And I knew exactly what was going on because I was reading this chapter. Mm. And a friend and I were both treating for her as the process went on. But it became so negative that lawyers were involved. And I mean, she was in a foul mood, I can tell you that. I was able periodically to sit down and talk to her about the way she was feeling and try to redirect her thoughts. And I think it helped her a lot, but it was a very painful experience for both her and her husband. But I learned a lot from it. Mm-hmm. It became so clear to me, something I had never seen before, because she didn't have that mental equivalent of a really easy settlement, mm-hmm. which is what I had the year before. I sold my house within a week, and the people loved it, and I mean, it was easy. And so I knew what the difference was, because I was so clear it was going to be a really easy sell, and people were going to love it, and they did. So I really learned a lot. So what I basically have now understand is that if I'm treating for somebody and things don't work out like they would like, I shouldn't feel personal responsibility for the outcome. It's not up to me. It's up to their conscious mind to feed the subconscious. So Holmes says, through your word, speak into mind and know that mind receives it. Mind believes, mind accepts, mind acts upon it, and mind produces it. So this is a really good illustration to me of how important it is for the recipient of the treatment to have a good mental equivalent. So a practitioner, as a practitioner, we can affect the consciousness of another person through treatment, no doubt. And for me, that's happened many times. But if the mental equivalent isn't there in the recipient, they may not see their desire manifesting. And Holmes, ever the radical, takes us a step further and encourages us as practitioners of religious science to keep our conscious mind clear. So he says, don't talk about limitation, divorce, murders, robberies, and accidents. Don't read newspapers, and don't let horrible stories enter your consciousness. Mm. So I have yet to give up reading the newspaper and watching the news, but and reading John's posts on
Facebook. I know, cringing as I read that last idea.
I know, but I mean, you think about it, we're manifesting. If we're opposed to somebody that's in office right now, and we talk about it, we think about it, we share that information, what do we get? More of the same. So,
I concur.
Yeah, so here's some positive suggestions for feeding your subjective mind during the first 30 minutes after waking up. Hopefully you're sleeping before you wake up. Meditate for at least 10 minutes. Read affirmations and feel them. Visualize your goals and feel it. This is kind of along the lines of Neville Goddard, who said, you know, just when you go to bed, imagine that you have what you're looking for and feel it. And then you ask yourself empowering questions. You practice gratitude. List, you know, the things you're grateful for. And then journal your future self how you want it to be. So, as John said earlier, Louis Armstrong is our featured musician this month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way, musicians are incredible manifestors. I don't know too many musicians that were born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And Louis Armstrong was definitely not one of them. He was born in August 4th, 1901, and he died in 1971. So he was known by nicknames of Satchmo, Satch, and Pops. And he was one of the most, I'm sure everybody here has heard about him, he was one of the most famous jazz musicians of the last century. I mean, the guy quit school at the age of 11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he came back, he came from a, you know, a family situation that wasn't too positive. But somehow, he was a genius at improvisation. Mm-hmm. He just picked that up so naturally, and he had a charismatic stage presence. So he was one of the first popular African-American entertainers to cross over, whose skin color became secondary to his music at a time when the country was extremely polarized on the subject of race. So, you know, I kept thinking about what an amazing mental equivalent he must have had to be able to manifest this type of life, not only in music, but also to provide an example of how it can be to ignore color and race, but to see the person and the gifts that they offer. So I'm going to end. Yeah, this is very quick today. I'm going to end with another quote from Holmes. How far can you hold up another person? You can't hold up anybody. A practitioner directs towards another person a certain force or creative power, and it will work. There is something right here that responds to everybody's thought. You can direct it to somebody else if the subjective state of the consciousness of that person does not meanwhile become changed. You must instruct people that they themselves are definite, concrete people in mind, and that every thought that they think has a certain amount of power. What your treatment does is to straighten out their consciousness, to give them a different outlook on life, a different viewpoint, and as their inner thought force expresses itself, they begin to realize the universality of itself. So it is.
Do you have a page number for that? It's from Life and Love, yes?
Yes, it's the last...
Love and Love.
Live and love?
Love and love.
Love and love. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And I can give you a page number?
I'd love it if you have it.
But I have to find the chapter first. But I'll get that for you later on.
That's all right. I don't want to break your stride.
Well, I'm done talking.
Thank you. Thank you. Quite excellent.